Chicago Stories on WTTW tells an entertaining and intriguing story about a person, industry, or event that shaped Chicago and whose influence still resonates with us today. Anna Gardner is the executive producer behind it all and joins us in studio. Welcome in, Anna.
Thank you for having me.
How long has Chicago Stories been around?
We have been around for a number of years. These five shows that we're about to premiere will actually bring us to 30 episodes.
Wow.
So we've done a number of seasons. We've had a fantastic reaction from our audience, so we just keep on chugging away.
So syndication soon after you get enough episodes, swimming pools, movie stars.
Big time. Absolutely. We're looking forward to all that. So yes. So if your listeners can tune in, that can help me achieve that dream.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You know, a favorite from last season, I want to talk about that too, was Inventing Improv and the Real Mad Men of Chicago, because you really dig deep into our history with deep stories. Because, you know, there's so many shows and new shows out there that'll give something a minute or two on the air, and you guys really go in depth. And I always learn something.
That's our goal. Yeah, we have 55 minutes of uninterrupted time, which is...
On one subject,
yeah. Which is incredible. So we are digging deep. We are bringing new information to light. We are always searching for new visuals, you know, new archive, new photos, to make this just such a feast for the eyes while telling you an entertaining story.
And when I mentioned the Real Mad Men of Chicago, like, you learn something from this every time. And so you knew that Chicago was the advertising capital. And they talk about New York, but it was really us.
Yes. And we can say that for a lot of industries, actually, which we've covered. You know, Candy Capital, yeah. We were the center of candy making. You know, Marshall Fields, we talk about merchandising and fashion. So, Chicago, you know, the stockyards, of course. You know, there are so many industries that we absolutely dominate as Chicagoans.
And very topical of, as I'm reading through the list, the debut episode, which airs tonight, but Legendary Blizzard. So you're pushing us into winter here.
I know. You look out the window and it's beautiful weather all weekend. Yeah. And then here we are bringing you down with sub-zero temps.
Yeah. But talk a little bit about what we're going to see, because it was two significant snowstorms. And one, I was just a few months old. And the other one, I remember being able to walk onto my garage roof.
That's amazing.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, we have two absolutely historic storms here. We have 67 and 79. 67 was it was 23 inches of snow, just
Crazy. Absolutely
walloped the city. You know, back then there was no way to detect, like we have now, what was coming. So the city was completely blindsided. You know, people went to work downtown thinking a couple inches were coming and 23 inches fell.
Right.
But at the time we had Mayor Richard J. Daley, who basically, you know, he had his messaging. People listened. He said, get out your shovels.
Exactly.
Dig yourself out. You know, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
12 years later, in 79, we have Michael Blandick, who is a very different leader.
Oh, yeah.
More than 20 inches fall, and at this point, you know, Chicagoans are
crickets.
Just fed up. Yes,
yeah.
And crickets.
Yeah.
The messaging was weak, you know, not coming from someone with a whole lot of charisma or, you know, not giving Chicagoans confidence. And so what happened was, you know, we've got 20 plus inches that fall and Chicagoans are fed up. And so he's out there saying, you know, you've got to clear your cars. There's people whose cars are in 16 feet of, you know, snowbanks.
Right.
And he does start ticketing and he does start towing. And so Chicagoans are angry. And what happens is, you know, a natural disaster becomes essentially a man-made catastrophe that changes the political landscape of Chicago forever, because Jane Byrne steps into the void.
Right.
And she sees an opportunity and she tells Chicagoans, you know, this guy's not doing it for you.
I would never let this happen.
I can, absolutely. Yeah. And her messaging works.
Her messaging worked, and then people got frustrated by voting not for him in the re-election.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
She becomes the first female mayor of Chicago.
Now, you know, the first person I do remember in my mind breaking that news and really following him and then actually having city officials into their news studio was Bill Curtis, who I'm having on a little bit later, and you worked for Bill.
I did. I got my start in television at Curtis Productions more than 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I love that you're going to be talking to him. He's incredible.
So I love that you did that long before Chicago Stories, but I'm sure you got some of those investigative chops by working with Bill.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. We were grinding out incredible documentaries at such a fast pace. I learned the entire business starting there. Yeah, absolutely.
He's never changed.
He's the same person
yes.
and has the same voice,
yes.
you know, that does not age a day. He just sounds amazing. he's such a good guy.
He was a rock DJ before all this. Did you know that?
No.
He was a rock DJ.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he was. Was it, what was his name? I'm going to have to ask him.
How
was
did
it,
I not know this?
Was it Tony Curtis?
Oh.
Was his name.
That's amazing.
And Tommy Edwards, who's a legend from the WLS AM days of the Rock of Chicago, said that's one of the influences that made him want to get into radio.
Unbelievable.
Were those pipes.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that great?
That's so great. I had no idea. I'll have to ask him about that next time I see him.
Yeah. And that's at 85, great. He's writing his book, and I know he's still working on projects.
He is. He keeps so busy, and he's got Wait, Don't Tell Me. I mean, he's a legend, and he has earned that reputation.
I have
and
to talk about Bill.
I mean, he's the nicest guy, too.
He is the greatest guy.
I could go on and on.
But these blizzards, you know, they just really set a tone for really, I think, a lot of cities around the country of you better watch your back and you better stay on top of things or you're going to be gone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think politicians now, if there's a hint of snow in the forecast, they got their salt trucks out because they don't want to be Michael Blanzik.
So why haven't they taken care of that when it comes to crime and so forth in the city? I mean, there's an outcry right now.
Right.
And that tells me that he's not going to get back into office. But I think more people voted in 79 in a Chicago election than they do today.
This was sort of a galvanizing movement. People were so irate at the way it was handled that it drove them to the polls.
All right. Inside the Tylenol murders. Now, how topical is that based on what we've been hearing the last few days?
Right.
And I know Jimmy Kimmel, which divisive, depending on what time you're on, he said this week when he came back on the air, he said, the only person that's more scared than I am getting back on the air is the CEO of Tylenol right now.
Right.
But this was a very unusual time where we just didn't know what was happening and people were dying in Chicago.
Yes. The randomness of this crime, I think, is what caused so much fear in Chicago. And it's the most notorious unsolved case around. And it happened here in Chicago. It's a story that's been getting a whole lot of national buzz. You know, there's a lot of docs out there covering this. And it was seven people who died after ingesting Tylenol that had been laced with poison, laced with cyanide, and put back on store shelves.
Was that 86?
That was 82.
82,
yes.
Okay.
And so, you know, the perpetrator didn't know who he was going to kill. And so it just became an absolute panic.
Tylenol
was recalled, pulled off all the shelves, and seven people died from cyanide-laced Tylenol.
I just remember that, and the Brown's Chicken murders were almost happening in that same decade, in that same period, and people were freaked out that this was happening and nobody was being held accountable.
Absolutely.
I remember when we moved my grandmother out of her home and into our home in the late 80s, we were going through the bathrooms. You know, older folks, you know, they sometimes keep things past their expiration date, and there was Tylenol in the drawer, several Tylenol. Or if I had a headache, they'd be like, oh, get some Tylenol.
Right.
I'd look at it and said it expired in 84.
Right.
I'm like, I don't think I want
this. Yeah, no. Right. Yeah, you don't want to touch that. You don't want to touch that.
But it is amazing that nothing has been resolved.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, one thing of note is, you know, while this is a fascinating investigative piece and looking at this unsolved crime, we also have a really incredible human element. Our producer, Peter Marks, was able to interview someone named Kasia Janis, who was a four-year-old little girl when she went to the grocery store with her dad, and he bought the bottle of Tylenol that ultimately killed him that day.
Wow.
And her aunt and uncle. So one family with three deaths in the same day. And she was there for all of this. And so we have, you know, she's never spoken publicly, but her story really turns us into just so much more than just a crime story. You know, this is about grief and loss and just sort of her resilience to get through this.
Amazing. Chicago Stories, the new season premieres on WTTW. Anna Gardner is the executive producer. And there's more with her next on 720 WGN. All right, we are talking to Anna Gardner. She's the executive producer of WTTW Chicago Stories, an absolutely phenomenal series, investigative journalism, 55 minutes on one subject. Love this show. The next one that you have coming up, and that's on October 10th, is about somebody that does not get enough press, and that's Rod Blagojevich.
That's right. Every time we talk to someone and say we have a show coming up on Rod Blagojevich, we either get a joke, we get a laugh. Yeah, we get some hilarious reaction because everybody knows they better buckle up. It's going to be, you know, the Rod show.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But I mean, you know, this was a guy that was fueled by greed and ambition, And he went to jail for it.
He did. It's an unbelievable fall from grace story. But former Governor Blagojevich sits down with us. Our producer, Tanya Lindsay, spent more than 3 hours with him face to face, and nothing was off limits. And of course, he had his agenda. He wanted to share his side of the story. But it was a fascinating, fascinating story to dig into, you know, and with the time we have to tell the story, you know, everybody knows, oh, he tried to sell Obama's Senate seat. But there really is so much more. And so we interview the FBI agent who worked on this case. We interview someone who went undercover and wore a wire to try and help the investigators because she felt she was being brought into sort of a pay-to-play corruption scheme.
Yeah.
So we really have the time to, you know, tell that investigation and give more context to this story.
Well, he never actually sold the seat. But, I mean, the government wanted to make an example out of him. And that's one of the reasons why he was pleading for years to get out and be pardoned, which he ultimately was.
Yep.
But, you know, it was a quick fall from grace. And we have our track record in the state of Illinois for governors that have gone to jail. And, you know, it just reminded me, you know, recently of Jim Edgar's passing. What a good, honest man he was.
Yep.
I know my father was in politics, local politics, and he absolutely revered Jim because he led the way in a very honest, truthful way.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Illinois does not have a good record for our governors. That is for sure.
No, not at all. So coming up is Iconic Foods on October 17th, and we've got one of the greatest culinary experiences in America here in Chicago. But we do have our kind of cliche moments of hot dogs and pizza and Italian beef and so forth.
Yes, those three, of course. You can't tell a story about Chicago foods without hitting the Chicago dog, Italian beef, and deep dish. And we do, but there is so, so much more here. This is a show that if you watch, I guarantee you, you will be hungry afterwards. You will want to get that tavern style pizza.
Yeah.
Making this show, you know, I would, every time I watched a cut of this show, I would leave hungry and I'd have to go,
you know,
find some Chicago food.
Sure.
But this is a story not just of those iconic foods. It's the history of all the foods that we know and love today that came from immigrants. You know, so people were coming to Chicago and bringing their foods with them, which became and evolved, you know, into the foods we know and love today. And what Chicago is famous for is not just the street food, you know, the handheld bites.
Sure.
It's also the fine dining, you know, the Michelin-starred meals.
Absolutely.
And so this show gets into everything from something you can buy on a street corner to, you know, the white tablecloth, you know, nine-course extravaganza.
True. But everybody has, like, if someone's coming into town and they want deep dish pizza or they want, everyone's got their opinion sometimes, but if you're giving someone advice, you know, there's like, you got to go to whatever it might be, Lou Malnati's, you got to go to maybe not Portillo's, maybe it's Gene and Jude's, but you're going to give them the place to go. But local food here is about neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's about more what you grew up with.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, we are a city of neighborhoods, and every neighborhood has its own flair, its own flavors, its own people and history. And that's what makes it so special. You can go into a neighborhood and have the most spectacular meal at a little corner shop that you've never heard of.
Sure.
Yeah. And so those flavors and those profiles and the history of the people is really what we try and dig into in the
show.
Absolutely.
But when they say, oh, you know, I grew up with this hot dog stand. Never heard of it before,
right.
But it was down the street from their house.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what it is. So, like, even in Chicago, like, I'll mention a pizza place that's long gone and no idea.
Right. But that's the beauty of it. There's so many good options out there.
Yeah. Let me ask you, if you're going to tell someone where to get a good hot dog or a good pizza, where would you send people? I know, putting you on the spot.
Oh, putting me on the spot. And especially since we interviewed so many of these people, I might have to take the fifth on this. I'm not sure.
I mean, Superdog's iconic, Gene and Jude's.
Tell me what your favorites are.
I would say Gene and Jude's and I'm gluten-free now. So,
oh, goodness.
I'm eating a hot dog without a bun
for the
most part.
That's not the same experience.
No, but I would say Superdog and Gene and Jude's are two highlights for me in pizza.
Yep.
I love Lou's, but there's a bunch of others I like that I can't eat anymore. Either,
right. But, yeah, you can't get that deep dish.
But
if you're
being asked, you gotta give some kind of recommendation, right?
Yes.
All right, this one I love. It's on October 24th, leading into the holiday season, is Marshall Fields. And I will tell you, Marshall Fields was such a part of so many people's lives in Chicago. But, you know, eating by the tree, I've done since I was five, and there's not been a year I've missed it, even during COVID, when they were wearing masks and doing to-goes. You know, you just went there because it was tradition. I hope this store, it's got whatever, seven floors. I hope it survives. It's a lot of retail these days in a space. But I remember when they were bought out, and 7 months before they changed the name to Macy's, their parent corporation did these commercials, like Marshall Field's It's as Chicago as It Gets. And then 6 months later, they became Macy's.
Yes.
Drove me crazy. But yeah, tell us what we're going
to
hear about here.
It drove Chicagoans
everybody
crazy.
Still to this day.
Absolutely.
I still call it Fields.
Most people do. People who love Fields, it's always going to be Fields. It's got a place in their heart. And the people who love this store love it more than anything. This show really is sort of a feast for all the senses. I mean, this is a story of just beautiful fashion, merchandising, salesmanship. You know, Marshall Fields was a visionary. He realized at a time when women really couldn't even be escorted downtown without their husbands, that if he catered to that female shopper, if he created a beautiful luxury experience, that women would come. And it ended up making incredible business sense.
Well, even the Walnut Room, like, you know, that kind of came about because Mrs. Herring would have, she didn't like the fact that these women would go home for lunch because it was not appropriate for them to be out in public at lunch by themselves or with other women or whoever. They'd go home and have lunch, and she'd have these little pot pies in the back that she would serve to them. I mean, it really changed not only the shopping experience, but I mean, honestly, elevated the woman in the shopping experience at a time where that was not the case.
Absolutely. And instead of running an errand, it becomes an excursion, you know, a place to be seen and to see others. And yes, I love the Mrs. Herring story because she was a saleswoman who had been working on a big sale and her client was hungry and left.
Yeah.
And she realized, you know, not only is this not right, but also this doesn't make business sense.
Very true.
If we can keep them in the store, we're going to make these sales. So
it took a few years for Macy's to say, oh, we better do something. So you can buy like Macy's bags and hats and t-shirts and postcards and other things because people still, you know, find that store to be iconic. And as I said earlier, they're still angry.
And you said you can buy Macy's hats. Did you mean Marshall Fields hats?
Oh, yeah. Let me do that.
It
took a while for Macy's to realize that Marshall Fields, you know, was a brand that people still embrace and had brand value. And then they'd start selling Marshall Fields hats and purses and bags and t-shirts and so forth just to bring a taste of it back to the State Street location, which is wild, right?
Yeah, it is wild.
All right, so Chicago Stories on WTTW is the new season is underway, and you can catch anything else associated with that, because there's also some stuff on the website, too.
Yes, we have all sorts of web extras, you know, things we couldn't fit into the show that you should definitely check out, and you can find all of that at WTTW.com/Chicago Stories.
Anna Gardner, thank you so much for joining us. All right, news is next.